Hyrcanus, like Joseph of old, makes lemons out of lemonade, or at least yolks out of the hide of the oxen. And Joseph II, ruler of Jerusalem, loved this son above all because of his brilliance. But, ladies and gentlemen, is brilliance truly what a Jewish father ought to celebrate? Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 38, The Second Joseph. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. Who is the most politically talented person in Jewish history? While any number of possibilities present themselves, it may well be that the winning candidate appeared when the Israelites were but a family and not even a nation. Joseph. Here we have a man who was hated by his brothers, kidnapped by them and sold into slavery, yet taken to Egypt, he made lemonade out of every lemon handed to him, ultimately finding favor with the most powerful ruler in the Middle East and rising to a position of enormous power and saving civilization from starvation. But what if there was another Joseph who also reflected profound political capacities? What if he too, using his wit, found favor with a king ruling in Egypt, who was also one of the most powerful monarchs in the Middle East? And what if this Joseph, unlike his namesake, took power not in Egypt, but in Jerusalem? There was such a Joseph. He lived in the Second Temple period, and his gifts seemed to have been profound. His rise was swift, his rule relatively stable, and yet, for Jewish tradition, he is uncelebrated, and therefore for most Jews today, he is entirely unknown. And if this is the case, it is because the political similarities between Joseph I and Joseph II highlight the profound moral and spiritual differences between them, thereby allowing us to understand Hellenism's lure, the Jewish disagreement with it, and why the original Joseph is remembered to this day. As we saw yesterday, spiritual leadership in Jerusalem passed from Shimon the Just to Antigonus of Socho, but the high priesthood and political leadership passed to Shimon's son, Chonio, or Onias. Chonio, in turn, angered the third ruler of the Ptolemaic dynasty. Into this moment of crisis and opportunity stepped a man named Joseph, son of Tobias, the high priest's nephew. Simon Sebag Montefiore, in his biography of Jerusalem, succinctly summarizes what occurred. Quote, in the 240s, High Priest Onias II tried to hold back the 20 silver talents he owed Ptolemy III Euergetes. This created an opportunity for a well-connected young Jew who decided to outbid the high priest, not just for Jerusalem, but for the entire land. This adventurer was the high priest's own nephew, Joseph, who set up for Alexandria where the king was holding an auction. Bidders promised the highest tribute in return for the power to rule and tax their territories. The Syrian grandees mocked young Joseph, but he outplayed them with outrageous chutzpah. He managed to see the king first and charmed him. When Ptolemy III asked for offers, the bumptious Joseph outbid his rivals for all of Coel-Syria, Phoenicia, Judah, and Samaria. The king asked Joseph for the usual hostages to guarantee his promised tribute. "I give you no other persons, O king," replied the cocky Jerusalemite, "than yourself and your wife." Joseph could have been executed for this impertinence, but Ptolemy laughed and agreed. Joseph returned to Jerusalem with 2,000 Egyptian infantry. He had much to prove. When Ashkelon refused to pay its taxes, he murdered its 20 leading citizens. Ashkelon paid. Joseph, like his namesake in Genesis, had played at the highest level in Egypt and won. End quote. So, Sebag Montefiore writes, thus, for the first time in its history, Jerusalem and its surrounding territory was ruled by a man named Joseph, who, like the first Joseph, had found favor with a monarch who ruled in Egypt. But was this new ruler of Jerusalem truly akin to the Joseph of the Bible? After all, what do we know about the original biblical Joseph? He was himself, as the Bible informs us, yifei tor v'yifei mareh, enormously attractive. So much so that upon working as a servant in Egypt, the wife of the man he served attempted to seduce him. But Joseph refused, saying, "There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" The biblical Joseph, in other words, was a man of pleasing aesthetic appearance, but the lure of the aesthetic is one he is able to resist. A striking midrash described Joseph's state in this moment. He felt, we are told, a desire to sin, but at that moment, an image of his father, Jacob, Israel, appeared to him in the window. It is, in other words, familial transmission, the perpetuation of all that is holy from parent to child, that is the essence of Judaism, And the biblical Joseph, in his example, highlighted how even in pagan Egypt, a son of Israel he remained. The same, unfortunately, cannot be said for Joseph II, and this can be seen from a terrible story found in Josephus. Josephus describes how this second Joseph, the ruler of Jerusalem, visited Alexandria with his brother and his brother's daughter, where in the king's court he sighted an Egyptian woman. Quote, "He then supped with the king, and falling in love with an actress that was of great beauty, and came into the room where they feasted, he told his brother of it," end quote. Knowing that a relationship with an Egyptian woman would be religiously forbidden, Joseph nevertheless entreated his brother to help arrange a secret liaison for him with the actress. His brother instead, according to Josephus' account, sent Joseph's niece. Joseph, overcome with drink, assumed that this woman was the Egyptian actress that he had desired, and ultimately told his brother that he was in love with the woman that had been sent to him. At this point, Josephus further tells us, Joseph's brother revealed who it was. It was Joseph's niece. Quote, "But his brother bid him be in no concern about that matter and told him he might enjoy her whom he loved without any danger and might have her for his wife, and opened the truth of the matter to him and assured him that he chose rather to have his own daughter abused than to overlook him and see him come to disgrace. So Joseph commended him for this his brotherly love and married his daughter, and on her begat a son whose name was Hyrcanus." End quote. Thus we learn in this terrible story how Joseph, through his niece visiting Egypt, acts nothing like the original Joseph in Egypt, and therefore in the midst of Hellenistic Egypt reflects his failure to meet the challenges of the moment. Who, the rabbis ask, is truly a gibor, a hero? Hakovesh et Yitzro, he who can control his urges. The Jewish redefinition of hero is meant here to be a clear comment on the Hellenistic tradition, whose heroes are defined by their feats and not for their resistance to aesthetic allure. The Greeks, to paraphrase it by Sachs, believed in the holiness of beauty, whereas Jews embraced the beauty of holiness. In succumbing to the lure of the aesthetic, Joseph highlights his embrace of pagan Hellenistic culture in Egypt, unlike his namesake, the original Joseph, who engaged in self-control and thereby emerged as a Jewish hero. Meanwhile, the woman with whom Joseph fell in love, his niece, bore him a child named Hyrcanus. Disappointed with the laziness of the seven children that he had from his other wife, Joseph sought to test the mind of Hyrcanus, giving him a challenge. Josephus further writes, quote, "He sent out the youngest, Hyrcanus, and gave him 300 yoke of oxen, and bid him go 2 days' journey into the wilderness and sow the land there, and yet kept back privately the yokes of the oxen that coupled them together," end quote. Thus did Hyrcanus find himself tested, given 300 pairs of oxen and no yokes for plowing. Hyrcanus here showed that he, like Joseph of old, can make lemons out of lemonade. Quote, "He invented a kind of stratagem, and what suited an age elder than his own. For he slew 10 yoke of the oxen and distributed their flesh among the laborers and cut their hides into several pieces and made him yokes and yoked the oxen together with him, by which means he sowed as much land as his father had appointed him to sow and returned to him. And when he was come back, his father was mightily pleased with his sagacity and commended the sharpness of his understanding and his boldness in what he did. And he still loved him more as if he were his only genuine son, while his brethren were much troubled at it," end quote. Thus, Hyrcanus, like Joseph of old, makes lemons out of lemonade, or at least yokes out of the hide of the oxen. And Joseph II, ruler of Jerusalem, loved this son above all because of his brilliance. But, ladies and gentlemen, is brilliance truly what a Jewish father ought to celebrate? As striking as it is that most Jews have never heard of this second Joseph who ruled Jerusalem for many years, perhaps it is even more amazing that we celebrate the biblical Joseph first and foremost, not as a politician, but as a father. Because the standard biblically based blessing bestowed by Jewish fathers upon sons to this day is, Yisimcha Elokim ke'Ephraim v'chi Menashe. May God make you, O child, like Joseph's children, Ephraim and Menashe. We each pray that our sons be like the progeny of Joseph. We do not say to our sons, may you be like Abraham. We do not pray, may you be like Moses. We wish our sons be like the sons of Joseph. Because Joseph's sons, as the commentators explain, grew up in Egypt, a culture hostile to all Abraham believed, and yet still retained a profound connection to the faith of their fathers. And so we too pray that our children remain loyal to our faith in a world that is so often hostile to it. Joseph II, then, utterly failed to live up to his own namesake, embracing aspects of Hellenistic values and culture. When Ptolemy III celebrated the birth of a child, Joseph sent his favorite son Hyrcanus to Ptolemy to offer a gift for the occasion. But in doing so, Hyrcanus depleted much of the family's accounts, and Joseph, angered, allowed his other sons, who were already jealous of the favoritism shown Hyrcanus, to attack him. Josephus again, quote, "But when his brethren heard that Hyrcanus had received such favors from the king and was returning home with great honor, they went out to meet him and to destroy him, and that with the privity of their father, for he was angry at him for the sum of money that he bestowed for presents, and so had no concern for his preservation. However, Joseph concealed the anger he had at his son out of fear of the king, and when Hyrcanus' brethren came to fight him, he slew many others of those that were with him, as also two of his brethren themselves. But the rest of them escaped to Jerusalem, to their father. But when Hyrcanus came to the city where nobody would receive him, he was afraid for himself, and retired beyond the river Jordan, and there abode." End quote. With this, Joseph was forever separated from his favorite son. And, following his death, the city refuses to accept the leadership of his progeny. Joseph ruled in Jerusalem for 22 years, years praised by Josephus for their stability and prosperity. And if nevertheless, Jewish tradition has very little praise to give to Joseph II, it is because he was very much unlike Joseph I. And today, Jews who have not studied Josephus or other histories of Second Temple Jerusalem do not even know that Joseph II existed. In reflecting on Joseph's story, we find the ultimate inversion. The original Joseph was shown favoritism by his father, which in turn provoked hatred from his brothers. That Joseph, in turn, made his family whole again and died with his children held up as the very symbol of all that Israelites hope from their children. The second Joseph, in contrast, refused to learn the moral lessons of his namesake's life. He not only embraced the allure of the aesthetic, he showed favoritism to one son, provoked the hatred of the others, and died with his own family destroyed. All unhappy families are unhappy in their own way, Tolstoy tells us. But in this case, the unhappiness of the family of Joseph II was directly linked to the failure of that Joseph to learn from his people's history and from the lessons of Joseph I. To this day, parents remember the Joseph of the Bible first and foremost, not as the vizier of Egypt, but as Yosef HaTzadik, the righteous Joseph who resisted Egypt's allures and who became the father of Ephraim and Manasseh. Thus, many parents every Sabbath evening pray that they become parents like Joseph and pray that their own children, like Joseph's children, embody Jewish posterity. Many of those parents have not read extensively of Josephus and would be surprised to know that there was another Joseph, another ruler, another man with great political gifts. The Joseph of Jerusalem is a fascinating footnote in Jewish history, but the memory of Joseph I lives still. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.